Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Tell everybody a little after 520, we'll have on with us Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth. Stink will be on with us to talk about the Saints. He's covering the game this coming Sunday as the Saints play the Carolina Panthers, and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 and free on the Odyssey app. Charlie, let's go back to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Bottle Man. Bottle Man, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Good evening, yo, and good evening, everybody. Again, my condolences to Bobby, because Bobby have to go through what we have been able to surpass through God's you know, except our parents going on to win the past.
That's tough to lose them no matter what, even when you see them in those bad conditions. So, yeah, our condolences go out to Bob.
Absolutely.
We're back to the basics in football, man. Speed kill. We lost Nwangu for failing the physical. Curt Merritt is still playing, still trying to get food on his table. Speed kill. We have a new offensive coordinator. Everybody don't know what you have in your kitchen or where you went shopping at. Every name brand still have the same kind of food. So, therefore, give him another opportunity, man, to get, latch on with the team, because we already have Keaton is still developing to get healthy, and we have Kubota going to be on that field for the season now.
I think, Bottle Man, you might be right about Kubota. I'm interested to see how quickly Kendra Miller can get himself back in shape.
Kendra Miller's doing a lot of talking on social media.
Okay, that's all great and fine, but you got to do it on the field and do it. With Curt Merritt, Curt was in the UFL. I think he was with Houston. Maybe with Curtis Johnson's team. And then he got hurt somewhere during the season.
It was the UFL. I think it was the UFL, Houston Roughnecks. Yeah, I'll double check that real quick.
But I know he got hurt, because I was watching. I think he made a couple catches, and then he got injured on a play.
Yeah, he was placed on the injured reserve back in April, but then he got activated in May, and then re-signed with the team on August. So, yeah, Kirk Merritt's still, as you mentioned, Bottle Man, trying to live that football career out. He's at the UFL right now.
And he'll get another opportunity. Kirk's talented.
Yeah,
he really is. I saw him in high school so much, and he sort of bounced around college football, but I think he'll get another shot in the UFL. Let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Donald in New Orleans. Donald, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you, Donald.
How you doing? First of all, happy birthday, man. I'm early. I know your birthday is Sunday. My birthday is Sunday.
Okay. Well, happy birthday to you, Donald. We are fixing on catching one Sunday, another one. So we thank God for that.
Hey, you getting old, man, but it's all good, man.
Yeah.
Hey, but I got a question, though. Look, my team is the Philadelphia Eagles. I get y'all covering them, but I just get your thoughts. What is going to happen with them, man?
Man, I'm surprised they brought back their head coach, because I think he lost the locker room late. Man, they are super talented. They are certainly the most talented team in the NFC East. Overall, I think they're the most talented. Now, can they get it all together? They really missed their offensive coordinator. Jalen wasn't the same guy. Once their offensive coordinator became the head coach with the Indianapolis Colts, and then both coordinators left after the Super Bowl. But, man, that's a lot of expectations in Philly. I did a show Friday there, and they expecting them to win the NFC East. And if you asked me to pick, I would pick them to win the NFC East. They got super talent at wide receiver with Devontae Smith and A.J., and to me, Hurts, he gives you so many issues as a runner and a thrower. Now, can they get a running game cranked up with Saquon now?
I'll say this, Mike. I think it's maybe going a little bit under the radar outside of Philly. But as far as coaches that kind of entered the season on the hot seat, it's got to be Sirianni, based off of what happened at the end of last season. As you kind of mentioned,
the only thing is he's got such a talented team, though, Charlie.
No, he does, and so like that team might
win.
So
you're always going to have heat in Philly, though.
Potentially make the postseason, win the NFC East, as you mentioned. But the drop off, and it wasn't necessarily an early drop off. We know the final 7 or 8-ish weeks of the season for them was where they just completely fell off the face of the earth.
Because they were so good early,
they started like 10-1. But the drop-off from the team that went to the Super Bowl the year prior, and we talked about it with Shane Steichen, the offensive coordinator who became the head coach of the Colts, and Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator who became the head coach with the Arizona Cardinals, both those guys are awesome. Like, they both, you know, maybe they flew a little bit under the radar, too, their first year as head coaches. They did great jobs. And I know that people say, oh, Jonathan Gannon won 4 or 5 games with Arizona's first year. Look at the talent they had on that team.
And look how hard they played.
And Shane Steichen
every week
almost had the Colts in the playoffs without Anthony Richardson, their number 4 overall pick.
With Uncle Rico.
With Uncle Rico, with Gardner Minshew, exactly. So those two guys, that was two big people to lose from that team as far as your offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. So there was always going to be a little bit of a drop-off. And they pushed it off. Like, they got off to that crazy hot start, 10-1, and then they fell off the face of the earth, as I mentioned. So you're entering this season, I think there's pressure on them. But there's also pressure on someone like Mike McCarthy with Dallas after what happened in the playoffs last year with that embarrassing showing in the wild card round against the Green Bay Packers, where they just got blown out of the water at their house by a 7 seed. So yeah, a couple things go into that there, Donald. I would say this, that, you know, Philly, the start of their schedule is pretty interesting. Like, they play the Saints in Week 3, but they start the season in Brazil against Green Bay.
That's a tough game.
That we've mentioned is really stupid by the NFL for having the two green teams playing in Brazil when there's issues with, you know, gang violence. You can't wear green in Brazil.
I think they lose that one.
I think they could. But then they come back home. And they host the Falcons, and then they travel to New Orleans to face the Saints. They go on a tour of the NFC South in those next 3 weeks, because then they also go to play the Buccaneers in Week 4, and then they host the Browns. Those first 5 games are pretty interesting. Get back to me after that, and I'll say what I think about the Eagles, because I think that, you know, if they go 3-2, maybe even 4-1 in that stretch, they're going to be feeling great about themselves, because that is a pretty tough first kind of opening 5-game stretch.
And, man, one thing you got to give Howie Roseman, he had taken a lot of heat, and then all of a sudden he gets a team to the Super Bowl, and he kind of reshuffles the deck, and then but he's done it again this offseason with a lot of moves here and there. He's setting this up. Hey, you got to win. And this isn't the toughest NFC East at all, at least not today. Now,
Washington
maybe next year.
Sneaky.
The only thing with Washington, that offensive line, man, I feel for Jay. Now, I just hope he don't get hurt there.
I think New York is going to be one of the worst teams in football this upcoming year. I was doing my record predictions. I've been doing it actually for a while now. I'm like, I have to finish it. I'm basically on, I think, week 10 at this point. Entering the season, if I'm looking at the worst teams in the NFL, like the 4 worst teams that I predict, it's going to be Carolina, New England, and then I have New York, and I have Minnesota. Because I know the idea with Sam Darnold having a kind of Baker Mayfield type of resurgence. I got to see it, yeah. Mike. And I think their defense is just not nearly as good as it's been in years past, because they basically got rid of so many pieces there. So, but as far as the Giants also being generally in that number, so you have one of the worst teams in the NFL, in my opinion, basically in that bottom 4. And then you have maybe a team that could take a step forward with first-year quarterback Jaden Daniels with the Washington Commanders. And then people are kind of anticipating the Cowboys maybe taking a slight step back, but they could still be in that general 10-win range that could be competing for the NFC East. So if you're the Eagles, I'm kind of with you, Mike. It's not necessarily a clear path, but it's clearer than it's been in years past.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. An early schedule gives them an opportunity to get a little bit of footing there, because it travels through the NFC South.
Yeah, big starts are always important. And as you mentioned, 3 games against the NFC South after that game in Brazil against the Packers, and then you have that game against the Browns. So, you know, once again, if they start like 3-2-ish, they're going to be looking pretty good.
And we'll see what happens at that center position. That Kelsey guy was pretty good.
Pretty good.
We'll be back with Mark Schlereth, our Odyssey NFL insider, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinking Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Hey, that's sort of clever. I don't know who wrote that, but that's pretty good. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. And, man, before I start asking some NFL questions, man, you got a full-time gig on TV now, right?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Be careful what you ask for. You might just get it. You know, I joked around today with a buddy of mine. I said, they called my bluff. I threw out a number, and they said, okay, sounds good. I was like, damn. So here I am in New York on a full-time basis, still doing games, still calling games on the weekend. As a matter of fact, I have the Saints game this weekend, so I open up with Carolina at the Saints. But, yeah, you know, good things going on, obviously. And love the daily show called Breakfast Ball that I'm on right now, still doing the podcast, The Stinking Truth. So got a lot of stuff going on right now.
Got to juggle the ball, so to speak. A couple of weeks back we had Jen on with us, and she was saying, Mike, guess what? I got the first game, Saints in Carolina. I was like, oh, okay, and then you don't have to travel too far in the morning to get there. But I think a big part of this game will be concentrated on both offensive lines. For Carolina, and I'll get your take on this, because of the fact they sort of duplicated what Sean Payton did early on in that he built around that center and the two guards early on with the Saints. And then I see, man, they're spending some money. They bring in Robert Hunt from Miami. Damian Lewis comes in, both Louisiana guys with Louisiana ties, to kind of shore things up front with a quarterback that is probably in the same range height-wise as Drew Brees. And with the Saints, you got a rookie guy who has played right tackle, and Taliasi, who's now on the left. Trevor Penning, who knows what's going to happen there on the right side. And you got a journeyman in Lucas Patrick at the left guard position. Mark, I'm telling you, y'all going to spend a lot of time talking about offensive lines on these two teams.
Yeah, no, ain't no question about it. And, it's really interesting because it'll 62 sacks that Carolina gave up last year on their rookie quarterback at that time. And, you know, the guy's about 5'10". He's a little dude, you know. So there's always that question about seeing over the line. And you go out and get Hunt, he's 6'5". And Lewis is a 6'3" guy. And their center's a 6'4" guy. And so I understand shoring up the inside and making sure that there's not immediate pressure on the inside. And Hunt's an absolute beast. Like, he just tries to road grade people. But it'll be interesting to see exactly how he plays. The other thing that was interesting, that's a 2-15 team from last year, and they took the sum total of about 8 snaps in the preseason in games. So not a lot of game time experience, not a lot of preseason reps. Obviously they did it in practice, but they didn't do it in the games, which always concerns me a little bit. I always think, the only way to really get good at playing football is playing football. And, practice is certainly important, but I think, putting on the silks and go out there and performing for a couple of drives here and there, I think that's also an important thing, especially when you put a lot of new components together. And I think, a lot of new components, and obviously you didn't have a lot of success last year. So interesting approach to preseason by the Carolina Panthers.
Derek Brown, I think, is one of the more underrated defensive linemen, especially from an interior standpoint in the NFL. I think he set a record last year with the most tackles ever for an interior defensive lineman. But everybody we've had on for the Panthers say the same thing. There's nobody really there to replace Brian Burns. You can say next man up, depending on who the next man is. And they don't have anybody in his area code. Jadeveon Clowney, he kind of drank from the fountain of youth. But look who he was playing with last year, too. He's going to get a lot more people kind of blocking, chipping on him. Your thoughts on Derrick Brown, because he's a big man. We saw him at Auburn, and one of the guys, Damian Lewis, has a great story in that when they were playing Auburn, and, man, Derrick was whipping his butt, and Joe Burrow's jumping all over him early in the game, and he said, man, it's like there's two of them out there. And Joe says, well, just block one of them. Slow one of them down so I can get a little bit of time to throw the football. That defensive unit, okay, I know they've added other pieces and they're bigger up front, but nobody scares me up front with that team other than Derrick Brown.
Well, he's a full-grown man now. That dude, that's going to be a great battle between he and Hunt, and Ruiz, because Ruiz can play. Like, Ruiz is a good player. He's really become a good player. McCoy's a good player, so that'll be an interesting matchup. But, you know, the thing about him being that big and being an inside player, you know, most of those guys take about 35 snaps a game, 35 maybe, you know, right in that area, right? Because they got to spell those guys. Those guys get tired. They're big. But Derrick Brown doesn't get tired. That dude plays 55 snaps a game, and he plays his butt off, and he is a dominant player. Now, the issue with Derrick is obviously he doesn't get a lot of sacks. That's not what he does. But he dominates the line of scrimmage. He is big time. You mentioned Clowney. I think they also got Wanham. I think he was kind of hurt during the preseason, so we'll see where he's at out of Minnesota. I'm with you. With that said, though, you know, you look back to last year, they were a 2-15 team that had no offensive firepower. They couldn't block the line of scrimmage. They had all kinds of three and outs, all kinds of sacks, all kinds of issues, right? And they won the two games they won were both on last-second field goals. So it's not like they put up any great shakes, and yet they were still, what, a top-five rated defense?
They were really good. They really were.
Yeah, which is incredible when you consider, other than Derrick Brown, you know, none of us can really name anybody else on that, you know. Shaq Thompson was hurt last year, so he didn't play a lot. Like, nobody else can really mention a guy on that defense. Like, they are, like, it's incredible. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to Ejero Ivero, who is their defensive coordinator, does a really good job of tying them together. And when you watch them, even though they played a lot of backups in the preseason, they're a tied together football team. They know exactly what they're trying to do. They know exactly how to play the leverage that they want. They tackle well. They come up and hit you. They do everything really well. They're a sound defense, gap control and assignment sound defense. And you know, testament to Ivero, who's their coordinator. He just does a great job with those guys.
Mark, one of the things, Anish Shroff came on with us Saturday. We're doing a remote. And he made the comment that last year the Carolina Panthers did not lead a game in the fourth quarter for 1 second. Both games were won on walk-offs. Yeah. He said not for 1 second did they have a lead in the fourth quarter, and it was two walk-offs. That's amazing to me in the NFL today that you don't have a lead, you know, either sometime in that fourth quarter. It goes to show that defense kind of held them in there. But when you're running for your life, like what Bryce was, and he didn't have a lot of weapons, I think the addition of Dante at receiver, spending a first-round pick on Xavier Leggett, I think that will certainly help that offense. But they really built to run the ball. The way they have played, they really want to run the football.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that's what they want to do. And they want to be able to, you know, to play in that gun, to play in that pistol, to play that, you know, tight and wide zone handoff stuff. They want to be able to dominate line of scrimmage, set up their play action, marry their play action to that run game, and take a lot of pressure off that quarterback and get him outside the pocket where he's got, you know, a half-field read with a real linear progression, some stuff that's really easy once you break contain. So, you know, that's going to be imperative, the way they set up their passing game and the way they get their big plays. And if you go, you know, if you go and look at the 49ers, for instance, they don't get their big plays in the passing game out of their drop-back series, right? Their drop-back series is a move-the-chain kind of series. They get their big plays off of play-action design and off of marrying their play action perfectly to the way they run the football. And I think that's what the Carolina Panthers are going to have to do. They're going to have to run it exceptionally well so they can get those linebackers and those safeties to, you know, to stop their feet, even for a moment, to suck up there in the play action fake and play fake stuff, and create those big opportunities. And when you watch like the Niners do it, I mean, they'll dump one off to McCaffrey. You know, it's an 8-yard throw from the line of scrimmage, but there's nobody within 15 yards of him. And they consistently get those kind of plays, whether it's Ayuk or it's Debo or it's George Kittle. But it really comes off how exceptional they are running the football. And I think that's what Carolina's going to have to do as well.
Our Insider Calls with Mark Schlereth are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your Walmart, Kroger, or your local grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Charlie?
Yeah, Mark, I'm going to hop in here and ask you about the Saints pass catchers, because Mike kind of brought it up a little bit with the Panthers adding Deontay Johnson, with a trade with the Steelers kind of getting their new wide receiver one, so to speak. Also drafting Xavier Leggett in the first round, drafting Jatavion Sanders, the tight end from Texas, in the fourth round. So they kind of rebuilt this offense. They're really hoping that Bryce can take a step. But the Saints side of the thing, I think that, you know, we've talked about Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed as those top two guys all offseason long. Like, Michael Thomas is out of the question, and a lot has been made about the year three jump for these top receivers. And people have talked about Garrett Wilson and Drake London, now that he finally has a quarterback throwing him the ball, as, you know, kind of key pieces that could make that year three jump that people are expecting. But with Chris Olave, I think it's pretty interesting because he's been really consistent early in his career. He took a jump a little bit as far as, you know, boost in receptions, a boost in yards. He went a little bit down with yards per catch. There just wasn't much yak last year for Chris Olave. Rashid Shaheed is also entering his third year, and he took a big step from year one to two, a former undrafted free agent. What's kind of your expectation for both of those guys entering year three?
Well, I think the big thing is, you know, with Clint Kubiak coaching the offense is, and, you know, you got to be able to, and you got to be a willing participant when it comes to blocking. And, you know, it's just funny. I just watched a play where Chris Olave, you know, the effort that he gave on a, you know, a little push crack on the inside on a safety who was rolled up, you know, it just wasn't good enough. And so they make a play in the preseason. I think it was Taysom Hill carrying the ball at a tailback position, you know, for no gain. And that's one of those things that's not going to fly. Like, and it has to be one of those things where you have to understand globally the importance of the role of blocking as a wide receiver. And in this offense, and I played in this offense for a long time, and I've been covering this offense for a long time, I've seen the evolution of this offense for a long time. In this offense, if you're not willing to do that, like, a lot of the big plays that you're going to make, a lot of the big time kind of explosive plays you're going to make are coming off that play action game. And so, like, you have to start understanding the global perspective of, if I get down here and root a guy out and I show people this on a consistent basis, when I do that and I'm faking it and all of a sudden I'm running a deep over or something of that nature, you know, or some type of, you know, pin flat or whatever I'm running, you know, I'm running some type of hide and I'm leaking out. Like, these are going to get me these big time over the top touchdown passes. You know, these things that go where I'm not covered and I got 20 yards of space. And that's this offense. And so some of that stuff is going to be, there's going to be a learning curve involved in that for those receivers, because, you know, I don't know how much, you know, how much pressure was put on them and how much of an impact and how much, you know, that was preached to those guys. But that's going to be something that'll be interesting to see. You know, do you want to be involved? Because there's a lot of receivers in this league that want to catch passes. You know, all the receivers want to catch passes. But there's some guys that don't want to do the dirty work. And it's the guys who are willing, you know, to sacrifice and do the dirty work. Those are the guys that make the big time explosive plays, because they sell it and it looks the same. And so, and this, you know, I mean, everybody's asked to block, but there's a different level of expectation in this offense when it comes to receivers and what their role is in the offense in regards to the running game, and how that, you know, how that benefits them if they really sell out, how that benefits them in the passing game.
Mark, I'll ask you about Sean Payton and the decision to go with Bo Nix as the starting quarterback. I know one thing about Bo. Man, you got a thick hide to him. I know kind of how he grew up. Man, he took some big-time heat at Auburn. goes to Oregon. It was the right place, right time. Everything fit for him, and he really vaulted himself from a guy that was almost like a semi-starter backup at Auburn into being a Heisman candidate, and he ends up finishing, you know, in the top realm for the Heisman. He becomes a first-round pick. I know one thing. You better have a thick hide with Sean. Sean's going to give him an earful every time he can get a chance to. How do you think that'll fit? Sean has never had that rookie quarterback to be the guy. And that's a big changeover because when he was here, you know, he had Drew for most of that run. And then it became Jameis Winston, and then he got hurt, and then they went through a variety of them afterwards. But Bo Nix starting as a true rookie here, everybody thinks, oh, C.J. Stroud did it. Okay, C.J. Stroud, he's an anomaly to do what he did last year. Your thoughts on what will happen with Bo Nix and the Broncos?
I predict on my new television show that he's going to be the AFC Rookie of the Year.
Okay.
Offensive Rookie of the Year. Like, the fit with he and Sean is so good. And, you know, just talking to Sean, just about his accuracy, his ability to process and get the ball out of his hands. As a matter of fact, there were times where, like, he is so quick, like, he's almost too fast through his progressions. He's, like, waiting to throw the ball on receivers to get out of their breaks. Like, come on, guys, like, I can see this, let's go. And that bodes well. Doesn't take sacks. You know, his last 2 years at Oregon, I think he was the least sacked quarterback. He was the most efficient red zone quarterback. He did not fumble in 2 years at Oregon. Like all the things that Russell Wilson wasn't last year for Sean, taking all those sacks, but you know, and 45 sacks he took last year, all the things that he wasn't, that's what Bo Nix is, his ability to process, to get the ball out of his hand. And he is like, he's super smart. And like, it wasn't like, oh, we drafted this guy in the first round, so we're giving him this job. He had to go out there and win the job. And Sean made sure of that. And he shared reps all camp with Jared Stidham. He shared them with Zach Wilson. And Bo Nix went out there and took the job. And he was exceptional, and it earned the respect of all the guys on that roster. Like the two biggest indicators of success in the NFL are number of games played in college, 61, the most of anybody in history, and completion percentage at 77, the highest completion percentage in the history of college football. Like, they're pretty good indicators, and I know for a fact Sean absolutely loves him. And, you know, he's a coach's son, so he can get coached hard. He's not going to get sensitive about it. He's not going to be pouting on the sideline, right? He's used to that. He grew up that way. So this is like the perfect fit. And for me, I think that's the thing that not enough people talk about. Right. It's the perfect fit. To me, it was the best fit of any quarterback drafted. Now, you know, Caleb Williams goes to Chicago and they've got a lot of talent and everything else, but defensive coach, coaching in Chicago and Matt Eberflus. Then you look at Jaden Daniels, still a defensive coach in DQ. You go through the list. Same thing in New England with
Coach Mayo.
Jared Mayo.
Rod Marion,
yeah.
Mayo. And so, and then Atlanta, same deal. Defensive coach, you know, and Raheem Morris. So, like, there's all these kind of defensive coaches. Then you get to Minnesota. Well, that quarterback, you know, had a cartilage repair, so he's out for the season. So, to me, this was the best fit. You know, a guy that has that processing ability like Drew Brees, that's got plenty of arm talent, you know, and people make a big deal out of arm talent, which is to me is the dumbest thing that I ever hear. Like, oh my God, the guy threw it 70 yards in the air. Tell me during the course of the season, how many times is a quarterback going to throw it in any game 70 yards in the air? Maybe three times on Hail Marys? Like, you don't, it doesn't work that way. The NFL doesn't work. Like, so what does it matter? You can have the strongest arm in the world. If you're late with the ball, guess what happens? It gets picked off. So, like, that stuff is that those tangible skills, like,
the athletic skills that people salivate over, to me, oftentimes are ridiculous. Like, they don't matter. So anyhow, that's kind of where I'm at. So I think it's a great fit in Denver, and I know Sean is just over the moon about this kid.
Stink, before we let you run, Mike kind of mentioned the Texans there and their first year with DeMeco Ryans, and after having the number 2 and 3 pick in the 2023 draft, where they get their kind of cornerstones with CJ and Will Anderson, and that just out of nowhere year that the Houston Texans just had, and all the expectations that they have entering this upcoming season now. I mean, it feels like there's always at least one team that kind of stuns people and is better than everybody expects. I mean, could you give a team on the AFC and the NFC that you think are flying a little bit under the radar? I mean, maybe it could be the Broncos in year one with Bo Nix, or any other teams that you kind of have kind of pinned as underdogs that could be really good this upcoming season.
Yeah, I do think the Broncos have a chance to be a lot better. Like, I don't think they're going to usurp Kansas City, but I could see them taking second place in the West and competing for a wild card spot. And again, part of that is I'm at camp every day, right? And I keep hearing people say, "Well, they're not very talented." Well, there's a difference between not being talented and not knowing the names of players. Like, they're talented. There's just nobody knows anybody's name because, right, they haven't won. And they've turned over some of that roster. So, you know, I think that team has a chance to surprise some people. Again, a team that's very talented, Chicago, with Caleb Williams. Like, they're talented outside the numbers at the receiver position. They're talented in the backfield at running back. I think they're talented at the tight end position. And probably what's happened to Chicago, kind of while everybody was sleeping, is their defense is wildly talented.
Yes,
you know, they went and got Montez Sweat last year. They've got a back end that can really play. Jalen Johnson is one of the elite level corners in this league that nobody really talks about. So they've got some dogs on the Chicago Bears that are interesting to me. Of course, they play in a division with Green Bay and Detroit, so you know that's going to be a tough one, for them to be good. I think the Atlanta Falcons, last year, I did 3 or 4 Atlanta Falcons games. I thought the Atlanta Falcons should have won 10, 11 games last year, but they had such quarterback issues that they couldn't get it done. Now Kirk Cousins comes in there. That is the offensive line. They're bullies. They can run the ball. They've got great running backs, and Algier and Robinson is awesome. Drake London's got a chance to be really good. You know, Pitts, if he's healthy, he could be really good. And defensively, they are super, super solid. The one thing that was missing in their defense was a pass rusher, and they went and got Judon. So, I think the Atlanta Falcons could be a really, really good football team that, probably is flying a little bit under the radar right now.
Mark, thanks so much for your time and insights. Always appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Take care.
All righty. That was Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. We'll be back with Triple Option right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, want to thank Mark Schlereth for joining us there. 20 minutes gold, man. Mark is just absolutely great, man. He's fantastic with it. Mike Dottiglia, along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. It's our Triple Option feature. Steven, you first.
Today, guys, talking about some sports betting. Football's back, and obviously expected to bring with it expected record-breaking betting. U.S. adults will wager $35 billion this NFL season. That's according to projections from the American Gaming Association. That would mark more than a 30% growth over the $26.7 billion that Americans who wagered over the course of last year's NFL season. Now, since last year, two guys, Maine, North Carolina, and Vermont have also allowed sports betting operators to launch in their states, and the decisions have permitted Hard Rock International to relaunch sports betting in Florida. So today, sports betting is live and legal in 38 states, including Washington, D.C. Definitely follow the money, as they say.
Whoa, that's a lot of cash being bet. But I will say this. They don't have them bright lights in them nice casinos because they're losing money.
Amen to that, right?
Man, Buddy used to always tell me, Mike, if you could pick 63% of the games, you a genius. If you do it throughout the course of a year, 63% of NFL games or college games, you're a genius. And he said, you think about 63% is not, that's not a huge amount. Man, you're walking away with some money there. But people will swear, oh, I can pick 70%, 80%. You hear all these guys on the air talk about all that. Come on. You selecting, but you forgetting about the ones you missed. So that's just the way it goes. Charlie?
Guys, I talked about the Astros pitching yesterday, and I got to give a shout-out to my raging Cajun, Spencer Arrighetti, named the AL Rookie of the Month for August today, and just joining Jackson Merrill for the NL Rookie of the Month, who's really kind of surged late trying to take that NL Rookie of the Year award from Paul Skeens, the outfielder for the 20-year-old outfielder for the San Diego Padres, had a 969 OPS, 15 extra base hits, and 23 RBI in the month of August alone. He's been absolutely unbelievable. But I still think Paul Skeens probably deserves that award. On the opposite side, as I mentioned with Arrighetti, former UL pitcher, pitching for my Houston Astros, 32 and a third innings pitch, 47 strikeouts, guys, and a 1.95 ERA. Been absolutely excellent for the Astros recently as they kind of get for that surge run towards October, a 168 opponent batting average as well. Spencer Arrighetti.
My triple option feature, this is for Bobby, and he would love this if he was here because he coached in peewee football. But the Steelers and six-time Pro Bowl defensive end Cameron Hayward have agreed to a new three-year contract, $45 million, $29 million in new money, and $16 million fully guaranteed at 35 years old. He had $16 million left on the final year of his contract, and so they've redone it now. You talk about a good dude in life, Cameron Hayward, Ironhead Haywood's son. And remember Bob telling all the stories about when he was in peewee football coaching him, and he would have to bring his birth certificate because people said, hey, man, it's no way he's 9 years old or 10 years old. And he would have to show it. And Cam, man, just a really good guy in life. And glad to see kind of in as he's entering the winter years of his NFL career, gets a new three-year contract with the Steelers. We'll be back to finish it off here on Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTeo along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. When we come back from the news break, Dr. Roto, and he'll answer all your fantasy football questions right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, want to thank Mark Schlereth for joining us there. 20 minutes gold, man. Mark is just absolutely great, man. He's fantastic with it. Mike DeTillo along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. It's our triple option feature. Steven, you first.
Today, guys, talking about some sports betting. Football's back and obviously expected to bring with it expected record-breaking betting. U.S. adults will wager $35 billion this NFL season. That's according to projections from the American Gaming Association. That would mark more than a 30% growth over the $26.7 billion that Americans who wagered over the course of last year's NFL season. Now, since last year, two guys, Maine, North Carolina, and Vermont have also allowed sports betting operators to launch in their states, and the decisions have permitted Hard Rock International to relaunch sports betting in Florida. So today, sports betting is live and legal in 38 states, including Washington, D.C. Definitely follow the money, as they say.
Whoa, that's a lot of cash being bet. But I will say this. They don't have them bright lights in them nice casinos because they're losing money.
Amen to that, right?
Man, Buddy used to always tell me, Mike, if you can pick 63% of the games, you a genius. If you do it throughout the course of a year, 63% of NFL games or college games, you a genius. And he said, you think about 63% is not, that's not a huge amount. Man, you're walking away with some money there. But people will swear, oh, I can pick 70%, 80%. You hear all these guys on the air talk about all that. Come on. You selecting, but you forgetting about the ones you missed. So that's just the way it goes. Charlie?
Guys, I talked about the Astros pitching yesterday, and I got to give a shout-out to my raging Cajun, Spencer Arrighetti, named the AL Rookie of the Month for August today. And just joining Jackson Merrill for the NL Rookie of the Month, who's really kind of surged late trying to take that NL Rookie of the Year award from Paul Skeens, the outfielder for the 20-year-old outfielder for the San Diego Padres, had a 969 OPS, 15 extra base hits and 23 RBI in the month of August alone. He's been absolutely unbelievable. But I still think Paul Skenes probably deserves that award. On the opposite side, as I mentioned with Arrigetti, former UL pitcher, pitching for my Houston Astros, 32 and a third innings pitched, 47 strikeouts, guys, and a 1.95 ERA. Been absolutely excellent for the Astros recently as they kind of get for that surge run towards October. A 168 opponent batting average as well. Spencer Arrigetti.
My triple option feature, this is for Bobby, and he would love this if he was here because he coached in peewee football. But the Steelers and six-time Pro Bowl defensive end Cameron Hayward have agreed to a new three-year contract, $45 million, $29 million in new money, and $16 million fully guaranteed at 35 years old. He had $16 million left on the final year of his contract, and so they've redone it now. You talk about a good dude in life, Cameron Hayward, Ironhead Haywood's son. And remember Bob telling all the stories about when he was in peewee football coaching him, and he would have to bring his birth certificate because people said, hey, man, it's no way he's 9 years old or 10 years old. And he would have to show it. And Cam, man, just a really good guy in life. And glad to see kind of in as he's entering the winter years of his NFL career, gets a new three-year contract with the Steelers. We'll be back to finish it off here on Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTeo along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. When we come back from the news break, Dr. Roto, and he'll answer all your fantasy football questions right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.